All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Options Discovery. Today, we have Scott Sheridan, CEO of Tasty Trade, formerly called Tasty Works. So let's just start off, Scott. Can you just thank you for coming on the show and quick introduction of yourself and your background and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, sure. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me. So it's been a fairly strange, I think, unorthodox journey. I graduated college in 1985, probably before most of your viewers were born, it's safe to say. Wound up going into, and this is funny because my kids laugh at this with not knowing that you have Amazon Prime today, but I started a mail order business. So that actually was a thing before you had all the delivery services that would bring things to you in about 15 minutes. So I had a mail order business selling CDs. That was another thing. And sunglasses. Worked out pretty well, learned a ton from it. And one of the things that I always talk about, you know, being an entrepreneur, not every business is going to be successful, but it's what you learn from it and you take away. And frequently you learn more from the losses than you do from the gains or the winners. So I did that for about a year, became interested in trading. My undergraduate degree was in finance and economics. So I had a business background, didn't know anything about trading, although Chicago, which is where I'm from, home of the derivatives market. So we had the Board of Trade, the CME, the Options Exchange. So we're the epicenter. And I was able to meet somebody who, that's typically how this happened. You meet somebody and they take you down to one of the floors. Mine happened to be the Options Exchange, and I never looked back.
Really interested. And so you've spent around 20 years at the CBOE, if I'm correct there.
I did. It was a little less. I was started in 86 and I officially left in 03. So, but a long time. I mean, in trading terms, most traders, I think the cutoff is probably about a year, where if you're going to make it, you got to figure it out within a year. Because typically, if you don't make it by then, you're not going to make it.
Yeah. Really interesting. And so after leaving the CBOE, you kind of started a couple other ventures. Can you kind of go into those as well?
Sure. Well, the reason that I left the CBOE was my partner, Tom Sosnoff, and I saw the writing on the wall, probably a little bit early, but we started an options platform trading business called Thinkorswim that we ultimately sold to TD Ameritrade. And now that entity has gone over to Charles Schwab. So my guess is most people are familiar with it. Super proud of it. I always refer to it as my baby, although I have no connection to it anymore. Still fun to see the commercials, and it's great to see that the Thinkorswim name has outlived both Scottrade and TD Ameritrade. So from there, I wound up leaving in 2012, and I took some much needed personal time, some time off, although Tom kept trying to get me to come back. And I wound up coming back in May of 15, and we started, as you said, at the time it was called Tasty Works, the brokerage firm, but about 2-3 weeks ago, we officially changed the name of the brokerage firm to Tasty Trade. So, and that's where I am now, the CEO.
It's really interesting. And transitioning from being a market maker at the CBOE to the retail brokerage business, what was the inspiration behind that? And what was that like?
I don't know if it was an inspiration or more of a motivation, but we just thought that the floor was going to go away. Now, this is 1999, late 99, when Tom and I started this, and we were really early. You know, we looked at what was available, and again, you know, for, you know, somebody in their early 20s, mid-20s, they grew up with the internet. So it's hard for most people to understand that the internet didn't exist. So we saw what was out there and we had no idea how to code. We had no idea how to build a website, but we just thought that we could do something better, which ultimately we did. So the concern for us was that if trading was going to leave the floor, where does it go and how would people participate? That's really what the motivation was. Again, we were early and the floor did survive for a long time. And when I say the floor is surviving, floors still exist. I don't want to say the floors don't exist. There are still 16 exchanges. You just don't have people for the most part. It's all electronic. You don't have people standing in a pit yelling, which is what we did.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And to kind of see Thinkorswim obviously is a big name early in the transition, and being a Chicago-based entity is really interesting. And I think that's why you're kind of the perfect guest for this week's topic, or the first part of this week's topic, which is going to be entrepreneurship in the derivatives industry. And I guess it could expand to just entrepreneurship in general, as it's not, a lot of the lessons learned are probably not localized to just the derivatives industry, but obviously that's where your background is. So we already kind of talked about what your motivation was behind going into Thinkorswim, but can you kind of dig a little bit deeper into transitioning into that entrepreneurship mindset and what those early stages look like?
Sure. Let me just take a step back, because being a floor trader is pure capitalism for me. You're an entrepreneur. You know, for me, what we talk about, Tom and I talk about, is as an entrepreneur, you eat what you kill. And most people don't have that mentality. Most people need to have a framework that says, if I go to work every day, I'm going to get paid, you know, either every 2 weeks or twice a month, whatever it is. And you know what you're getting. As an entrepreneur, you don't have that type of security. So one of the comments I make, if somebody's thinking about starting a business, you better have a big appetite for risk, and you better be willing to work your ass off. Those are the two items, because after that, you do need a little bit of luck, because the marketplace has to buy into what you're doing, and you need to have good timing. You can have a great idea and have the wrong timing, and you're going to fail. But my suggestion, and I mentor a fair amount of people, you know, younger people, and I say, they ask the question, you know, should I do this? And my answer is, if you believe in yourself and you're willing, again, if you are willing to go to work and just crush it every single day, there's no breaks. You just have to get after it. There's nothing better than having success. And success can be defined in a lot of different ways. It doesn't have to be strictly monetarily. But if you, you will create success that is, to me, it's not equaled by anything else in the business world.
That's really interesting that you say that. And it's kind of something that I've personally seen through a lot of the show is people that have been in the floor trading and were in the business for a decent amount of time, right? Past that shakeout period, did end up starting a lot of their own ventures. So do you think there's probably a big connection between that for life, like you said, and the entrepreneurship mentality?
100%. And, you know, you never know where an idea comes from. And when you look at entrepreneurs, one of the things I'm fascinated by is I love talking to people about their business, whatever it is, especially businesses that I don't know. I just like to hear, you know, whatever they're willing to share, how they go about, how they came up with the idea, you know, how they make money, you know, what is it that keeps them motivated on a daily basis. So as a trader, one of the interesting things about, and you see this, trading on screen, I'm looking at the TastyTrade platform right now, that you see it, and every day it's different. And today's a crazy day. You know, we have the SVB issue and regional banks going on. So the markets are all over the place today. But one of the great things about trading is you never know where your next opportunity is going to come from. You don't know when it's going to be busy. You don't know when vol is going to explode. And that was the same thing standing in the pit. You could stand there and have nothing, nothing, nothing. And all of a sudden, boom, you know, something happens. And then everybody's screaming and yelling and trying to figure out what's going on.
Really interesting. And so to kind of drill down into that early process when you and Tom started Thinkorswim, what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced early on in that process? Probably a lot.
A lot. The biggest one, which is, there was the 2000, dot-com bubble, and the market basically imploded, melted down right when we were getting going. And people were like, oh my God, what a horrible time to start in, you know, the broker space. And our answer was, again, you can't pick your time. You know, when your time is ready, it's your time and you just go with it. Well, what we thought was going to be a negative turned into a huge positive. And the reason I say that is because when things are going well for people, when they're making a lot of money, they're not changing. There's no reason to move your brokerage room. If you're doing the same thing, you know, you're making money, you're going to stick with it. So as a trader, if you had a really good day, you would walk through the same turnstile. You would go have the same lunch. You would wear the same tie, you know, whatever it was, because very superstitious. When things don't go well, people look for a change and they look for an excuse. Well, it wasn't me, it was my broker. you know, it wasn't me, their system went down. It wasn't me, it was something. Their risk team closed me out, they shouldn't have, whatever. So it really turned out to be a great time for us. Now, Thinkorswim today has, you know, it's got great brand recognition, but when we launched, it was a tough name. And it took a while for it to gain traction, but once it did, great. Similar to, you know, Tasty Works and now Tasty Trade. An unusual name for the brokerage space, but we have the credibility to pull a name like that off.
It was really interesting too. Just out of my own curiosity, what was the inspiration behind the name itself, Thinkorswim?
So Tom is, he's the visionary, the creative. He'll come up with ideas and then I usually will help. We'll sit down, we'll massage them, work through them, say what does work, what doesn't work. And one of the things we're really good at is pivoting. He called me one night and said, okay, I've got the name. And it was a play on sink or swim, but think like using your brain. And he called me and I said, got to think about that one. And I slept down and I called the next day. I said, I love it. And it's funny because with this one, I don't know if you're going to ask a question, but let's jump to it. Tasty Trade, the name originally was for the network. That's where Tom is, you know, mm-hmm. So people want to watch the show on air. When we were starting the brokerage firm, the logical thought was to change the name of the network and give us Tasty Trade because it's obviously tied closely to what we do. We're in the trading space. But there were a variety of reasons we didn't do it at that time. We have a new aggressive marketing campaign team that have recently joined, and there was a big push by them to change the name, and we agreed to it. So it's a process. Changing your name is not as simple as filling out a couple pieces of paper and saying we're now operating, you know, under a different name, because everything on the back end was tied to either Tasty Trade, the network, which is now Tasty Live, or Tasty Works, which is now Tasty Trade. But I think it's going to be an easier sell or an understanding for customers when they think about Tasty Trade. They're like, well, that's where I trade. Perfect. Works.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really interesting as well. I know later in the interview, I have a lot more questions about Tasty Trade itself, but I'm really glad you kind of gave that anecdote, because as an entrepreneur, branding is a huge component in making sure that you're promoting yourself in the right way. So that's really interesting to see that perspective as well.
For sure.
So the next part that I kind of want to talk about is just going back to Thinkorswim real quick to kind of talk about that as your first venture and kind of talk about what were some of the reactions back then from some of the incumbents in the market in the brokerage space, because it seemed like you guys had a real technology focus as well, and just how the market reacted to that, especially in the retail brokerage space.
So, I mean, I could spend a couple hours talking, but I'll try to keep it to a couple of minutes. When we launched, we were under everybody's radar. You know, people didn't know. They're like, they have no idea there's a startup going on. But then what quickly started happening was we were capturing a lot of really good customers from the big name firms. Well, big dummy animals, the large corporations, they're typically immobile, so it's hard for them to adjust and come out with a competing product, which was our software. I mean, the software was great. At the time, it was, you know, it really changed the industry. So what they did was they just started lowering commission rates because that they thought would stop the outflow of assets to us. So because we were so nimble with our technology, we had the ability to create, literally, I could create a fee schedule for you in about 30 seconds and tag it to your account. So people would come in and say, well, I have this, or I get this, right? And I'd say, no problem, because it basically most of the rates, it all comes out in the wash. Back then, there was a ticket charge with a contract fee, and depending on where you were, you thought it was better. We didn't care. And net, it worked for us. So they realized that just lowering rates wasn't going to do it. But Tom and I do take a lot of pride that, you know, we think that we have saved the retail industry a few billion dollars in commissions over the last 20 years because we were really the driving force. And I know that to be the case because when we launched Tasty Works, now Tasty Trade, January 3rd of 2017, within the first, I think, 3 weeks of launching, all the big houses lowered their ticket charges. And I smiled and I said, thank you very much. I appreciate that you're worried about us and you should be, because, you know, we're good at what we do, and, you know, and we did it again. So it all goes back to help the customer, because listen, lower commissions obviously is better for anybody. Why would you want to pay more if you don't have to?
Yeah. And that's really interesting. And I'm glad you brought it up, because later out in the interview, hopefully we can dig a little bit more into that fee structure at Tastytrade, because it's a really interesting, it is a really interesting take on the commission structure for the industry, especially in the retail space. So just to kind of go back into the topic of entrepreneurship, and this is more general, is how important was it to create your vision when you started the company, and how did that vision change over time as the company's developed, either for Tastytrade or for Thinkorswim?
Really good question. And my answer is, I don't know if this is going to answer the question, but this is 100%, it's a critical lesson for anybody that wants to start a business. You have to be flexible. So when we started the business, we did not know where it was going to go. We had no idea that it was going to have the impact that it did. But what we did was we came into work, again, every day we busted our asses, and we pivoted when you have to pivot. Most people refuse to pivot because they have an idea and they just keep forcing it. And they say, I'm going to make this work. But the marketplace might say, you don't have a good idea, or your idea needs to be modified a little bit. Now, clearly, Thinkorswim at that time was perfect for what was going on. There was another firm, by the name of Options Express, that was acquired by Schwab. The funny thing is, small world story. We were in the exact same building where the CBOE is in Chicago. And we didn't know that they were starting a business. They didn't know we were. They just did browser based. We did software. So they launched about a year before we did. But they also, you know, had a significant impact on the options market. I mean, I think ours was bigger because it was software. And I think that's the big difference. But we are really good at saying, we think we have a really good idea, you run with it, and then say, you know what, not a good idea, didn't work, here's the reason, throw it in the garbage and keep moving. So I don't know if that's the answer, but again, flexibility in your mindset is critical in any business.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting perspective as well. I think that's one thing that a lot of times, like you said, entrepreneurs can potentially get stuck on is not being able to change and adapt to the marketplace. So I guess to go along with that, obviously you and Tom are very big names in the industry from all of your ventures that you've done, but there's obviously other people on the team that are super critical. So when it comes to choosing people, especially maybe in the early stages or maybe now when things are more developed, what do you look for in people that you choose on your team, and what's really important characteristics to have?
Another really good question. So we do have an amazing team. We have an amazing culture, and it's a culture that creates opportunity. And that for me, it's a big deal. So we always look, so let me take a step back. When I'm interviewing, and I've interviewed hundreds of people, I typically don't look at a resume. I know a lot of people will be sad to hear that, but I don't really care. When we started, we had strong connections to the floor. So we brought over a lot of former traders and brokers because we thought that was going to make us special. And then I quickly realized that typically ex-floor traders and brokers have an attitude and baggage that goes with them. And we didn't have to do that. So then I pivoted, moved away. My first non-floor trader experience was I hired a woman who was an early childhood development major in college. Now, you can't get more diametrically opposed, you know, like childhood education and trading. And she's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I said, don't worry about it. I said, you have an amazing attitude. You're smart and you're hungry. That's what I'm for. So we can teach people, and I've proven it time and time again. One of the early groups of hires that I had a yoga instructor, a solar panel salesman, and a MBA student from UIC, who used to be a photojournalist. None of these people had any idea what they, you know, what the markets were, what supporting trading was, anything. The yoga instructor is now going to be our chief compliance officer in Canada. the solar P&L salesman is trade desk manager, and the photojournalist who got his MBA is going to be moving to Singapore for us to be the chief operating officer for Tasty Trade when we open in Singapore. So I look for attitude and desire. And with that, you can climb a lot of tall mountains.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think the term that always comes to mind for those types of attributes is, it's a little cheesy, but coachability is a big thing, right? The ability to learn and adapt. And
it is. And for me, I just stay away from people who are rigid. You know, I will say this, if somebody needs a list of daily responsibilities, they're never going to make it at Tasty. You know, we need people who are self-starters, people who go out and not just do their job, but go out and say, listen, how about, why aren't we doing this? You know, suggestions, let's try that. Let's do it this way. And I love that, because you just don't know what you don't know, and you don't know where you can go if you're open to other ideas.
Yeah, that's almost inevitable with any type of entrepreneurship type startup or culture, where sometimes it's not even because you need to be a self-starter because you want to be. It's because, well, you have to be able to plug and play into these different roles, because that's what the company needs at any given time.
That's it. And, you know, typically when you're starting a business, you're going to have, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 people. You're not going to have 20 or 30. That would be highly unusual. So if you have 2, 3, 4 people, everybody has to wear multiple hats. And typically the way that we would decide, you know, who's going to take over something, we'd say, who's got time? I do. Great. You're now in charge of whatever the new thing is. Go figure it out. And it creates for a little bit of chaos, but it creates for a very exciting day-to-day, you know, business or, you know, activity.
Really interesting. And I'm glad we could dig into that part of the conversation. I guess the next part, and just to kind of conclude this segment on entrepreneurship and kind of segue more into the brokerage business, is just to talk about, you know, throughout both Thinkorswim and now through Tasty Trade, it seems like technology and trading features have really been a prime focus throughout both of those companies. So how important has technology as a differentiating factor been for you throughout all of these brokerages that you've been a part of?
Different answer depending on what time you're talking about. Early on, huge differentiator. But technology is really commoditized. So most of the platforms, you know, obviously I think Tasty Trade's the best, but most of the platforms are really good. So, you know, one of the things that the reason I like our platform, obviously, because it's ours, but we built it from scratch. So it was literally our CTO had a whiteboard and just did it the way that he wanted to do it. And it's great. So it's wicked fast. It's pretty thin. You know, it's not bloated, which a lot of the platforms are bloated. But the bigger difference is we can release daily. Whereas a lot of the bigger firms, they're set to a release schedule that could be monthly or every 6 to 8 weeks. So we can get, you know, we can push things out in a much, you know, faster manner. So, but today, again, technology isn't the differentiator that it used to be. Let's say that.
Really interesting. And so I guess to kind of transition now into the brokerage business, and let's just start off with Tasty Trade itself and kind of talking about, you know, what the firm is. I know we've kind of already mentioned this already, and the tools that you provide to investors on the platform.
Yeah, sure. I mean, again, as I say that it's commoditized, there are differences. So on our platform, you can trade, depending on your account type and your approval, you can trade stocks, options, futures options, crypto. So we've got it all. We are looking to expand into some other asset classes as well. We'll see how that works. One of the items that, you know, that we will always focus on, let's say this, take a step back. We always focus on the customer. So everything that we do revolves around, how does this benefit the customer? Does it make for a better trading experience? So for example, it took me about 11 months, but I finally won. And I believe we're the only firm that offers this, but we allow for naked short calls in IRAs that are over $25,000. So when I first started going down that road, I was told no other firm does it, so you can't do it. And I said, well, that's not an answer. I was told by our clearing firm, they didn't think it was a good business decision. And I said, that's not an answer. So I believe every firm will, I know we do, but I believe every firm will allow somebody to sell a cash secured put in their IRA. So that means that if you sell a $50 put, you have to have $5,000 to cover less the premium received, assuming the stock, you know, because the stock can't go below zero. So the reason the most, that no other firm, I believe, offers short calls because they don't want to deal with the risk on the upside. So theoretically, you could have a stock that would, you know, explode, you blow up your whole IRA. So I'll ask you a question now. This goes back to 18 when the market was up. I don't know if you were participating. The market was up every day. So what we did was, because we hold just like a stock, it's 100% margin for an option. I'm sorry, for the option, it's 100% margin. For if you're selling a put on the call side, we're also holding it 100%. So the research team for Tasty Live ran, I believe, 350,000 incidents of stocks over $25, no volatility products. How many occurrences in 350,000 events, close to close, so 24 hours to 24 hours, how many times was the stock up 100%, which would have then caused a problem?
Maybe like 5-10% of the time.
Okay, so 10% would be, you know, 35,000 in the 17.5 if you're going 5%.
Zero. Wow.
Zero. So this is where perception can become reality, and people hear, oh wow, you can't sell a call, that's too risky. Now, I'm not saying that there isn't risk in selling a call, but yeah, when we hold it in an IRA up 100%, there was no violation. Now, it doesn't mean there can't be. I'm not saying it can never happen. But again, your answer is very common. You know, 5%, 10%, you know, well, that seems like a reasonable number. Because people are like, oh, I've heard that's super risky. You would never do that. And again, I'm not suggesting it's the right trading strategy for everybody, but it was the point I was making. We fought for this one. And for the people that use it, they absolutely love it. Absolutely love it. I have, you know, another one that we are fighting on. And I think for this will impact probably a lot of your viewers, which might have a smaller size account. If you're familiar with the pattern day trading rule, so the PDT rule on the security side, for those who are not aware, is you're limited to 3 day trades, which means you're opening and closing the same thing on the same day. It could be an option, it could be a stock, futures, crypto are not included in the PDT rules. If you're under $25,000, you are limited to 3 day trades in a rolling 5 business day grid. So we have been working with a group called SIFMA. It's a big industry organization. It was pre-COVID. I thought we were making good progress with FINRA and the SEC. And what we're trying to do is get them to modify the rules. So if a firm has a front end that could show that they could control this, that the rules don't apply. And the reason for the rule, which came into existence around 2000, back then, and it was a reasonable decision, I think, by the regulators at the time, but it just doesn't exist anymore. There were day trading shops literally in a shopping mall. Go into a shopping mall, you pull in, there'd be some day trading shop. You would go in, you give them $10,000 of your own money. They would give you $100,000 or $200,000 with which to trade. If you lost your $10,000, you'd be done. But the firms weren't capitalized well enough. So if they're giving 20 people $100,000, do they have the money to back that if something goes horribly wrong? The answer was they didn't. And FINRA correctly came in and said, you know what? Forget that. If you're only 25 grand, three day trades in a rolling 5 business day period, that doesn't exist anymore. So we were pleading with them to say, look, here's why. Great deck. We had 16 firms that were involved with this. COVID hit, conversation stopped, meme stocks happened, regulators no longer interested, although we're starting again. And the big reason that we're starting, and I'm not going to quit this fight, is that FINRA, depending on what clearing firm you were with, you got either one PDT reset a year, or Apex, our clearing firm, had a more relaxed view or opinion of the rule, and they gave customers a reset every 90 days. The new FINRA interpretation, which I'm saying it's a new rule, it's not an interpretation, one reset in the life of your account. So Alex, if you become a pattern day trader and you're under 25,000 at what a firm ABC, you get one reset. If you do it again and you can't get over 25,000, you're set to closing only. My analogy is that it's the same thing as if you lived in Illinois, you get one moving violation. If you get another moving violation, you lose your license for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Seems a bit punitive. And I'm, you know, I hope that the regulators will take a step back and realize that they have, in my opinion, overstepped their power. We'll see.
Yeah. And that's really interesting. And I think that lends into a bigger theme within Tasty Trade itself. I mean, if you just go on the website, one of the most first and foremost quotes on the website is giving power back into the hands of the investors, because you know, with the implementation of Tasty Live as well, which we'll go into, and that whole educational side of the business too, you know, being able to give the tools to the investors so that they know that the best person to manage their money is themselves.
100%. And again, it's so counterintuitive that most firms restrict. Unless you have experience, they won't give you proper trading levels. But you can't get proper trading levels unless you have experience. So what do you do? You know, so we make the argument that to have more tools in your toolbox has to make for a better experience. If you're limited, if you're, you know, boxing somebody with one arm tied behind your back, what's the chance that you're going to win that fight? Mm-hmm. Not very good, right? So, you know, the regulators and most firms look at this and say, oh, no, you can't do that. That's too risky. Rather than trusting the person to say, look, I'm assuming you're an intelligent person. You're going to do your research. You're going to learn, when I say research, learn how to properly trade. And there, Tasty Live is a great place. There are a lot of places where one could go to learn. It's free. You know, you could pay for information, but there's a lot of really good free information. And then take all the tools you want. Doesn't mean that you have to use them. It just means that if you have it in your toolbox and you need it, you could go grab it. But if you need a hammer, you don't have a hammer, what are you going to do? Mm-hmm. So for us, we hope that people, again, will take the time to learn, which we have a ton of education, and then say, look, take that, put it to use. So we will give people the opportunity so long as they meet certain criteria. Obviously, every firm has criteria. So long as you meet the criteria on our account opening application and you apply, qualify for the works, which is everything, then for my mind, you're going to have a better chance of being successful. Now, on top of that, you can trade futures options, and crypto with separate accounts. But on the front end, it all looks like it's the same thing. And again, just more asset classes to trade, I think, gives people a better opportunity for success.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And another part of that philosophy, which we kind of mentioned earlier, is the commission structure of Tasty Trade and how that's interesting. And just looking at some of the comparisons online, right, versus some of the other brokerages, especially in options, which was the most surprising to me, seeing how much you can kind of save and how your commission structure works, being capped with also no closing commission costs. Can you kind of go into those as well?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So this is an extension of the conversation when I was talking about how we built an internal, you know, application that allowed me to create different commission schedules, and we could change them on the fly. That was the good news. The bad news is that I spent what felt like half of my day negotiating with people. So when we started Tasty, I didn't want to do that. I'm like, I can't go through this again where I'm just negotiating with everybody. And there has been compression on, you know, on rates over the last, you know, 10, 15 years. So what we did was we came up with a schedule. We were the first firm, and I believe there are other firms that do this now. We were the first firm that came up with, if you bought back a short option for a nickel or less, we didn't charge you a commission. This goes back to probably 05. I mean, we did that a long time ago. I'm not going to name names, but I believe one of the bigger houses did it like 3 or 4 years ago, and they were so proud of themselves. We're like, that's great. We did that, you know, a decade before you did. So why did we do that? The reason we did it was because we wanted the people to better manage their risk. And you have a lot of people that were leaving a short option on, which still has risk up until expiration. It still has risk. So you know what? We won't charge you. Just pay the nickel to the street. We won't charge you admission. Take it out. People loved it. So what we did was we incorporated that into our commission schedule and we created Tasty. And for equity options, we charge $1 a contract to open and $0 to close. And again, the reason is we want people to take the risk off in a timely manner. Don't just let it go because you don't want to pay the commission. Mm-hmm. Take it off, move out to something else where you have a better return on capital. We then, shortly after we started, we added what to me is the best part of our commission schedule. It's a $10 commission cap on all products other than CBOE prop, which would be, for the most part, SPX and VIX, but some of the other CBOE only products. So we have customers that are trading thousands of contracts at a time and paying $10 commission.
Wow.
Now somebody will say, well, I could go to a firm and I don't pay commissions on anything, on any of my options. And I'll say, true, but take a look at what you're getting. And sometimes we have an expression, sometimes you can't afford free. So the reason we say that is to look at what the whole package is. Is there any customer support? Do they have, does their product offer, is their product offering equivalent to what ours? Do they limit what you can trade? Do they limit how you can trade? So it's not, don't just look at, well, I can go to a particular firm and not pay any commission. So why would I open an account at a firm that does charge me? You have to look at everything. So for us, $1 to open and $0 to close, really, really good value for customers. And again, $10 commission cap on most products per leg. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's something I didn't think about, which you mentioned, is using that commission schedule as a way to encourage customers to better manage their risk, which Correct. Is something that I guess a lot of people, especially from the trading side, don't think about because that's really a brokerage area problem. But it's something where when you guys want to manage the overall risk that you guys are exposed to, you know, having that commission schedule the way it is really helpful for that and helps not only provide value for customers, but value for you guys as well.
Absolutely.
So really interesting as well, and something I want to dig into is Tasty Live, obviously as an educational platform and kind of Tom's inception into the Tasty Live, Tasty Works idea. Can you kind of talk about some of the history behind that as well as, you know, what it's evolved to today as a network for education?
Yeah, absolutely. It's for anybody that has not checked it out, please do. TastyLive.com. It's all free. So there's no hook where you got to go, you get a couple, videos for free and then you got to pay for it. It's all free. And it's amazing. And they do tours around the country. They're starting to stop during COVID. They're starting again. So check your city. Typically there's Saturdays. There are some Sundays in there and they're great. Super entertaining. And when I say amazing information, they have college finance professors that will watch the show to learn about the math because everything on the show is probability based. It's all based on math as opposed to you have a lot of educational platforms that will teach you charting. So you're looking at technicals and or fundamentals. This is strictly math. It's all probability based. It's really, I think it's a great way to look at trading and look at the markets. So there's a bunch of different talent and you can hopefully find somebody that you connect with. And the feedback that we get on it is, it's awesome. So they were our original marketing partner because everybody who was watching for the most part came over, opened accounts with us, and we've moved well beyond that. But now I think we're feeding customers back. So customers who had never heard of the network are coming and finding the trading side and then are discovering the network because we do have the network on our software. So if somebody wanted to watch the network while they're trading, again, free, go ahead, have at it.
Yeah, and that's interesting. And you guys have also implemented some of those educational pieces into the trading platform itself with the platform feed and the follow feed and things like that. Can you talk a little bit about that as well?
Correct. So we do have something called the follow feed. So let me see, I think there's about 15 different people that you can follow. And what's great is that the trades are put up live as they're happening and they're real. This is not a paper trading platform. These are real trades that people are making. And if you want, you can go ahead and create a similar order and file them, or you could just, for informational purposes, you could just see why they did it. And if you have questions and you want to reach out to them, they will get back to you and explain, you know, the concept or the thought process behind why they made the trip. So I think it's a great feature on our platform.
Yeah. Super interesting. And kind of digging through the information on the website, that was something I definitely wanted to bring up. So to kind of conclude this section, and to talk a little bit more about what you see as the future outlook of the brokerage space, what do you think the biggest trends are going to be moving forward and what you guys are approaching at tastytrade?
I hope that it revolves around alternative assets, because there's a lot of really good ones out there, and people being open to learning about how to take calculated risk, especially younger people. You know, they have to get out there and take some risks. You can't sit here and just say, I'm going to buy the S&P 500 in my mind and just say, that's all I'm going to do. That's not going to teach you anything. And in the long run, some of you, I'm sure there are fund managers that will tell me that I'm wrong and they should just buy the S&P 500. But as you said, you made an earlier comment, people need to take control of their financial future. And you're not taking control of your future if you're just handing your money over to somebody who's more interested in the fees they're charging you than in your return. So how that's going to happen, I hope that what you're going to see other platforms follow, we have some ideas about bringing out, again, some alternative assets. We are getting very close to, we have a wallet. So there's a Tasty wallet. It's outside of the brokerage firm, but it's part of the overall company. So if people have coins at, you know, somewhere else, they can put in a wallet, bring them over to us. We are about to allow for coins to come in for deposits, which is awesome. We had the hurdle. There was an AML, which is anti-money laundering, but there's so many good systems out there that can track where the coins on the blockchain, you know, where the coins came from, that we're comfortable with it. Our clearing firm is comfortable with it. So my fear, that's all the good stuff. My fear is that the current regulatory environment is non-friendly to individual traders. So you have the SEC and FINRA, and to a certain extent, the CFTC and the NFA, they are trying to make it so difficult for retail firms and for retail customers that they're not going to say that they don't want these firms in business, but I think it's implied by what they're doing. Now, I believe that the industry is strong enough that we will weather the storm of what we're going through, because it does ebb and flow depending on who's in office. But I've been doing this on the retail side for 23 years. But again, going back, I started trading in 86. So I've been in the industry a long time, and I'm not the only person that thinks this. The regulatory environment has never seen, you know, it's never been at the level of scrutiny that it currently is today. So that is my concern. And, you know, talking about Silicon Valley Bank, which just happened over the weekend, and also the bank in New York. My fear is that something like this, my fear is not that it becomes a systemic problem where it goes to the banking system. I don't believe that's going to happen. I think it's a, you know, one-off, a two-off, and we're good. I mean, if you told me that one of the five big banks was having a problem, I'd be worried. I'm not worried about these banks. They took, when I say take risk, they didn't take intelligent risk. And they were either, let's say this, it's either fraud or incompetence or a combination of both. But, you know, when they went out and 30-year paper, that bought long-term paper, 30-year paper-ish at 3%, and now interest rates have moved significantly, they're dead. And they chose not to do anything about that, which, shame on them. Now, my concern here is that the regulators come in and you have politicians that start screaming, we need new banking regulations. Look, this is going to happen. And I go back to my point, how many staff were up 100% day over day out of 350,000 events, and it was zero. And I'm not saying that there is a zero chance that there is some systemic problem that we don't know about. We're not looking at another 08-09. That's just not, it's not on the table right now. But people, regulators can use fear to say, well, we have to win this. And fear never is a good thing, because it forces, I think, people to make bad decisions. So my upside is extremely bullish on the industry. Options, you know, the option volume from a retail perspective has absolutely exploded over the last 10 years. And I don't see that changing unless the regulators come in and tell people that you're too dumb to know what you're doing and we're not letting you do it. You need to give your money to a money manager who, again, for the most part, they don't care about you. They just care about making fees. So kind of a long ramble, but hopefully that answered the question.
No, it definitely did. And I think it was some great insight from someone that's really been in the industry for a while, can kind of see these trends come and go. That's really interesting to see from the retail perspective. And I think it is pretty well aligned with Tasty Trade and what you guys stand for in terms of giving power back to the investors. To kind of close out this interview and really appreciate your time today, just a few questions I usually ask every guest. And the first one is just the most important lessons you've learned over your career in the derivatives industry, or as you said, you mentor other people. So advice that you pass down to them when maybe they're getting their career started.
Don't be afraid to fail. And what I mean by that, people are going to be like, you're an idiot. Why would anybody want to fail? Failing is great if you learn from it. You don't want to fail to the point where you're knocked out. So you don't want to ever have your third strike like a baseball. If you have one strike, you're still in the batter's box. If you have two strikes, you're still in the batter's box. Three strikes, you're sitting on the bench. Don't be afraid to fail. Embrace it. Learn from it. My feeling is if somebody tells me they're so proud of themselves that they've never had failure, either they don't know what failure is, they haven't identified it correctly, or more likely, they haven't pushed themselves hard enough, because you don't know what your limits are until you fail. So to me, take risk, calculated risk. Again, you have to be reasonable. The reward has to be worth the risk, but don't be afraid of it, especially if you're young and you have time to recover.
Yeah, that's really good advice and can apply to career advice or trading advice or all the above.
Sure.
And calculated risk is kind of the most important piece there, but not being so risk averse that, you know, you're like you said, you're afraid to close it out just because the commission costs. You're going with a broker just because of the commission costs, to use a analogy there, rather than focusing on what your return could be.
That's right. So people, I love when people say they don't know how to evaluate risk. They've never evaluated risk. And I have a simple question. I say, when you walk across the street, do you look both left and right? Of course they do. Okay, then you understand risk.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that.
Right.
And so I really appreciate that. And so for the closing question for the show, and maybe something that you're curious about learning more about, is there any recommendations you have for maybe another topic we should cover in the future?
In fairness, I don't know what topics you have covered. But what I would say is, if you could address the question, if you get somebody to come on, and I'm going to put somebody on the spot here from one of the bigger firms, and really press them as to why regulatory and compliance at those firms restrict, lock down traders until they get the experience. And the simple question, as I said, is how do you get the experience if somebody's not willing to give you the opportunity? Mm-hmm. So that one never made any sense to me. Besides that, you know, any trading ideas, I love, you know, to me, the options world is, it's a much more capital efficient market. And I love discussion when people are talking about stocks and why should people be trading stocks. And then you hear the other side, which is, why don't you use the capital efficiency of the options world? And then it creates a very, very interesting conversation. Besides that, the PDT, if you get your viewers behind this, and you know, what I'm hoping is that people will reach out to FINRA and say, this is unfair. And if we can get enough people going to FINRA, and it's easy, you could file right on their website. You could post a message to them, that hopefully we can get them to listen and cooler heads will prevail. And we can roll back some of the changes that they are making, which to me are just way too punitive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really interesting and definitely something that I think we should cover in the future. Not something we've covered before, so it's perfect. But anyways, I just want to thank you for your time. Thanks for coming on the show. And
my pleasure.
Before we go, you know, where can people find more information about you or Tasty Trade? I mean, obviously Tasty Trade website.
Yep, tastytrade.com. Or if somebody has specific questions they want to reach out to us, you can reach its trade desk at tastytrade.com, or they could call. It's 888-247-1963. We have an amazing desk. Happy to help in any way that we can, and hopefully the people check us out, because I'm super proud of what we offer, and I know how good it is.
All right. Well, Scott, thanks so much for coming on the show, and hopefully we can talk to you in the future.
Thanks, Alex. Have a great day.
You too.
If you're hungry for more options content, make sure to subscribe to the JLN YouTube channel and check out our social media accounts. Be sure to check out our website, johnlothiannews.com, MarketsWiki, and the John Lothian newsletter for more content.